This week, your questions answered by a Porsche dealer principal.
Brought to you by Nineworks.co.uk, the fastest growing online Porsche community, supported by the Nineworks Marketplace. Nineworks Radio is your dedicated Porsche and car podcast, hosted by Lee Sibley, Andy Brooks, and Max Newman. Nineworks Radio is carefully produced with special input from experts around the industry and powered by our valued members of the Nineworks Driven Not Hidden Collective.
Max and Andy, how are you, good sirs?
Pretty good.
Very well, thank you. Very well.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. My name is Lee Sibley. Welcome to Nineworks Radio. As always, joining you on the airwaves for today's podcast, we have got Mr. Andy Brooks and Mr. Max Newman. It's the three of us today for a little bit, and then we've got a guest. It's a really good interview as well to wrap up another series of Nineworks Radio. What have you been up to recently, gents? I know I saw you all in a little garden in Chichester over the weekend.
Yeah, a bit of Goodwood Festival speed. That's nice. That's nice.
Which one of you guys was at the wheel of that GT1 then?
What, they hit the bales?
The GT1 Touring, I think they call it now.
I haven't seen that yet on the old highlights.
Haven't you?
No. Was it the 98 GT1?
It was, yeah. Wasn't that the replica one, I think you said it was, Lee, rather than the Le Mans winning?
It tends to be the one they wheel out is the replica. It's the one that we did a Nineworks TV video on.
Yeah.
Last year, actually, September time, I think we published it earlier this year. So it is a very, very, very faithful replica of the number 26. So there are five chassis, as we've covered earlier this series, I think it was, talking all things GT1. And the three of us, we were standing behind that at one stage over the weekend when it was in the paddock.
Yeah.
Sounded great, didn't it?
Wasn't that the position?
Oh.
We were sort of in between the hedge and the
railing.
And then the cars were directly in front of us. And it's getting the big horn on, especially with the 74 RSR, of course, that always does that for me. But the noise and the fumes, it was just fabulous, wasn't it?
That's a great spot, isn't it, at Goodwood? If you get up by the railings there in the collecting area as they come in and then, just hang out for a while before they roll out down the hill. It's a good spot. Lots of smells and sounds and,
The guys that I was stood next to, they said they'd been there all morning and lots of the drivers come over to them there and start talking because, they just sat around for half an hour while they bought the car in. Then they got to stick around for half an hour and wait. So, they were chatting to the guys that were left to the left of me there. They had a lovely little morning having a chat with all sorts of drivers.
A good tip for Festival of Speed in the future.
There is a lot of waiting, isn't there, I suppose? So,
For the drivers,
So it might as well get stuck into us kind of mere mortals ogling the cars, really. I have to say, I know, Andy, you're obviously a big, big fan of the RSR and everything that comes with that package, including the sound. For me, it was just so good because we were properly right behind that GT1 98 when it started up, and it just sounded like ungodly, really, didn't it? It was really nice. Kind of typical Metzger, actually. Typical Metzger, but obviously, like, very loud. But I think I said to you on the way home, Andy, that, like, it was a very different experience. When I last was around that car, it was in the Porsche storage facility at Stuttgart, and it's deadly silent, and it's in a room full of other completely still and silent historically significant vehicles. In a weird way, it's almost like sitting in a chapel with these cars. Do you know what I mean? Like silent, still, and you almost feel like, oh, I must be still and silent myself. So then, like, to see it just basically like whipping up a frenzy and basically like firing up to full aggression, ready for a hill climb at Goodwood, obviously a completely different character. So it kind of felt like the same car, but different in a way. It was really cool to see both sides.
Every time going to Goodwood, it's like going back in time, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah.
You're seeing stuff moving, you're smelling it, you're hearing it. There's nowhere else that you can really get up that close with so many historic cars. It's just outrageous, really.
Yeah, definitely. Like GT1, like for me personally, you know, I think I was like still trying to tie my laces when that thing was lapping the Saab. And so certainly like not young enough to appreciate it. So it's nice as an adult to be able to hear that. When else do you hear a GT1, really? Yeah. Or, you know, see a GT1 in motion on top of all of the other cars that were there as well. So,
yeah.
It is one of the amazing things about Goodwood, isn't it? Is the access to cars that, I mean, if you're obviously everyone can go to the Porsche Museum and pay and go in and look around, and that's quite special, the way they curate things. Very few people are as lucky as you, Lee, to have a relationship that enables you to go behind the scenes at the museum. And that's, you know, even more special in some ways. But to add the element of sound and motion to those cars is really special, especially, as you say, when you're in such close proximity.
Yeah.
It's really something else, you know. Goodwood should be applauded for slightly changing the game, I think, in terms of how historic motoring events are done. You know, 30 years ago, because that was the 30th anniversary of the Festival of Speed this year, you know, they've been doing it for a long time, but I mean, it's, and this year for Porsche people like us, very, very special.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What else did you see, Max? Because we got split up. There was you and Hugh.
Yeah.
Sort of had to go off and do a particular thing at one point. And I don't think we saw you for the rest of the day. So
no, it was when those.
What did you see? Because we missed loads.
Well, it was that Porsche set that we'd been looking at in the collecting area.
Yeah.
It was their run up the hill that I wanted to see. And I was trying not to take too many pictures on that day. I thought, you know, the weather's so awful and there's so many great photographers there. I'll just enjoy it. But, you know, then you've got a camera in your pocket. You want to take some shots, don't you? So I wanted to see them going up for a start, you know, to add that other dimension of maybe a little bit of speed to the sound and the smells as well. So I didn't want to miss that. And Hugh and I had found a decent little spot, actually, where I could maybe take some pictures.
Yeah.
Thanks to George Woodward at Porsche Club GB, actually. He sorted that out for us. So I dashed over there and watched them. And then, I mean, there's stuff that we didn't see. Then we bumped into... We went to have a look at the DLS Turbo, which you guys had already seen.
Yes.
Yeah. So we went over there, and whilst we were there, we bumped into Guy and James Vellacott.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
We then wandered off with them into the supercar paddock, and then, you know, the day just takes you away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We didn't get to there was still stuff we didn't see.
Did you get to the Porsche field?
So
that's where all of the club stuff was parked, and they had like the maze.
Yes.
There's loads of stuff going on over there, but we didn't get to see that at all. So
we'd come in that way because we had Porsche parking there again through Porsche Club GB. So we came in and out that way. Yeah. So I did see, and I had to go back there during the day. So I did see, that was like a little car show. I say a little car show, a 200
massive
strong car show. So not a little car show at all. And they had a Boxer Spider RS on there and various other bits and bobs. And actually, which did make me weep slightly, I guess it's now time for the 997 to go into the Porsche Classic program. So they had a lovely Guards Red Gen 1 997 in amongst their other bits and bobs. I did look at that and think, oh, I really like 997s. And then, of course, remember that I used to own one.
that particular car, by the way, was restored by Charade, friends of the podcast.
It?
Yeah, they restored it. So I believe the car itself is or has been within Porsche GB from new. It's done 90 miles, 9-0. That's it. Guards really? Red.
What, since it, since restoration?
From ever? New. From oh new. God. Yeah. It's been like a training car. So I believe it's lived, if not at Porsche Reading, but it's been within Porsche GB for all these years. But like all cars, they don't like sitting around, do they? I saw it at Charade at Christmas time. They were just kind of starting the restoration then. And like paintwork was in a bit of a bad way, really.
Probably
I think
it
had
taken apart a few times.
Yeah, 100%. It kind of almost looked like it had stickers over it or, you know, something or some decals at some point because it had that, you know, when you take a stick off, it's got that, like, residue. Kind of like that, and just like mottled paint in places. So they did a brilliant job of turning that around. Faded headlights, you know, like the standard fare with a 997 of that age, really.
Yeah.
So Yeah, very cool. I hope someone will put some miles on it now. All casters have been driven, so.
It certainly did look good. I'd put some miles on it for them if they want.
I'm sure you would, Matt. I'm sure you would.
I have no problem with that. So we saw that, but there was still stuff I missed. You know, a day is not enough, especially if you want to chat, you know, and I like to stand around and chat as much as you boys and the rest of us do, especially with members of the collective and other friends.
You almost feel like you need to go into, sort of thing. Into skies to get round.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Or you need to do 3 days, you know, it's definitely not enough. And the thing that I missed, which I was a bit gutted about, was that, I don't know who the artist is, but it's been going around the world. I see it on the Instagram, is that sort of full-size child, like playing with a toy car, laying on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a full-size 992.
Where was that then?
And that was, I think it was out on the cricket pitch.
Okay.
And I didn't see that until the next day or after I got home or something like that. And I would like to have seen that, because whenever I've seen it on the gram, I think that looks bloody cool.
Yeah.
I missed that and probably a ton of other stuff as well. But it was still brilliant. Yeah. I still had a great time in spite of the shocking weather.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon we bumped into 20 odd people that we knew. Starting straight away with one of the collective, John Wallace, who was driving a Tesla, like a VIP car, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which was pretty much as we walked into the site from the parking we were at. And then the last person we saw was Richie Payne on a golf buggy as we were driving out. It's just like, yeah, unbelievable how many people bumped into. Really crazy.
Yeah, it was a fantastic day. It was a day of people, really. I mean, you know, started with you, Max, and Hugh as well, Hugh Tarpey. Like, shout out to Hugh, who helps design, or he does design our excellent merch. And there's news on a drop for some Nineworks merch coming up later in the pod. But for me personally, it was great to meet Hugh first time and kind of connect in person. You know, what a guy. And enjoyed hanging out with you guys. We saw a load of people, bumped into a load of people. It was lovely to have a chat. Ben McLaughlin, who's been on the podcast series ago. We had a lovely chat with Richard Atwood, Porsche's original Le Mans winner from 1970. Yeah. He kindly let us take a pew with him while he was having a pizza, which was really cool. So Mark Sumter at Paragon as well was running up the hill in his 903 GT2.
Oh, didn't that look good?
It looked fantastic. Yeah. It was a pleasure. At the end of the day, we helped Mark put the cover back on the car. And obviously it was all quite windy and whatnot at the time. And I remember putting this cover on over the front, and Mark's GT2 has got like these carbon canards or dive planes at the front.
Yeah.
And, you know, what with all the incremental weather going on, it was a bit of a, is this going to stay on sort of thing? But we put it on, and actually looking across that paddock at the end of the day and just seeing this row of Porsches underneath all these covers, and it was kind of, you know, guess the car was a 962 sort of shape there. Yeah. There's definitely a 993 GT2 in there with that wing, and it was kind of quite cool, you know, reveal the magician in a way. But for me, Goodwood Festival of Speed this year was all about the people. Didn't see a single car go up the hill.
No. I saw the tail of the Singer 963, is that right? Is it the 963? What's the
okay?
New
yeah,
one?
Yeah, the Le Mans car.
Yeah, the Le Mans car. Yeah, I saw the tail of that moving because it's so big.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's the only thing I saw.
I saw a bloke go past on a motorbike, and I just saw like his helmet above the crowd zipping from right to left on my like peripheral vision. I thought he's in a hurry, and then oh no, that's where they're going up the hill there. Yeah, and that was it. But it was just so like fantastic to bump into so many people and from the collective and share some stories. So great to see you all.
Yeah, really good. God, the whole motorbike thing, you know, I'm a big bike fan, as you know, and I prioritized Porsche over everything on that day. And the MotoGP bike lineup was amazing in terms of people and bikes. And I definitely missed out there. But, you know, you can only do so much in a day. It's hard to fit it in. But looking at the gram, you think, oh man, I missed him. I missed I missed everything. I still saw quite so much.
Jealous of Guy and James because they had some big crazy motorhome that they were staying in. I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And for the benefit of listeners, Guy and James, we had on a couple of weeks ago. They're the chaps that run Porsches by the Lake. Yeah. So we heard them in the aftermath of that. Yeah. They were definitely doing Goodwood right this year. I think their bus was you know, the size of like four terraced houses wedged together. It was a big old bus, that one.
Yeah, so, big old bus. Yeah, they were definitely doing it right.
They are. I reckon you could get a nice little warm sleep in underneath it, actually. Maybe that's a tip for next year, is just take a sleeping bag and get underneath James's bus. Don't need to be inside.
Absolutely. So yeah, look, that was Goodwood. As we said, it's the last episode of the series today. So we've got a few kind of admin-y bits or updates for you, certainly collective-oriented, merch-oriented. We're just going to discuss what we're going to be up to over the podcast hiatus that we like to do, just to ensure that we're fresh and ready to deliver you brilliant content again for the end of summer, stretching into autumn. And yes, we've also got a fantastic guest. If it's all right with you boys, I think we should roll with that.
Yeah.
Get it going. So today's guest, as you can probably guess from the title of the podcast, is Jonathan Sullivan, the dealer principal at Porsche Centre Bournemouth. Now, you may remember we had Jonathan on. We were working it out, Andy, weren't we? It was about 18 months ago.
Yeah, November 2021, would you believe?
Yes. So Jonathan is, DP at Porsche Centre Bournemouth, which is Andy and I, it's our local Porsche dealership. So they recently moved premises. So recently, it was just over 18 months ago now. And we kind of watch things grow and evolve from there. We've been really, really lucky to host a couple of Cars and Coffees down there. The last one was Mid-Engine and Mates.
Yep.
Back in, I think that was May.
Yep.
So Jonathan and the whole team there at Porsche Bournemouth, has to be said, they're really good, really good for opening their doors and allowing us to come in. And it was Jonathan that said, hey, why don't you come back in, bring the mics, ask me some questions. And we said, well, how about some members of the Driven Not Hidden Collective ask you questions rather than us. So take that kind of filter out. And Jonathan, to his credit, said, I'm all in. So with that mind, no filter. Yeah, exactly. I think, Andy, that you and I would be diligent enough in our role as journalists there. And certainly the start of the conversation, it's fair to say we dive straight in, but it was really nice to offer that opportunity to Works and Hero level members to put that question over. You know, not too often really you get the opportunity to answer or ask a dealer principal a question. It's another opportunity to get an answer as well, which doesn't always happen, I assume. So look, with that in mind, let's cross over to Porsche Centre Bournemouth and hear from Jonathan Sullivan, dealer principal. So Andy, here we are at Porsche Centre Bournemouth with a special guest.
Very special. He grimaces at that thought. Wow.
Jonathan Sullivan, dealer principal here at Porsche Centre Bournemouth. Thanks for having us back in your lovely office and inviting us back to the centre. I think we were saying off the mic, it's been 18 months.
It has. Yeah, no, great to see you guys again, and thank you for giving me an invite on the podcast again. It's gone quick, hasn't it?
It has.
Flown. Yeah. 18 months.
It has.
That's crazy. Yeah, well, I think it was the 1st of November. Mm. So yeah, coming up 2 years almost. I think
we are creeping towards our 2-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yeah. So last time we were in this room, we were reflecting on, first of all, we had a Cars and Coffee here, but also more importantly, it was a brand new centre at the time.
Yeah.
As we said, you're 18 months down the line now. So how has that kind of interim period been?
Do you know, it's been really good. It's gone really quick. I think overall, I'm really pleased with where we've got to and where we're going. We've had some growing pains. So let's be honest, you know, not everything's been perfect, but I think definitely now where we've brought some new members into the team because we've needed to grow. The expectations of the customers have grown as well, rightly so, because now we're in a brand new, got to stop saying brand new facility because we're not. For the customers who knew us from the previous site, a big jump up in facilities and standards and a big investment. So I'm really pleased, but I don't think we've topped out at what we can do and how we can keep improving that sort of Porsche offering for all of our customers and potential future owners in the future.
Yeah. Has it required a change in mindset, kind of assimilating it to like football terms, because I know you're an Evertonian, but say like, you know, Luton Town getting promoted to the Premier League, that requires kind of Premier League level of thinking. Where your centre is bigger, does that mean, obviously you've got more ramps, there's more cars and customers going through servicing, but like in terms of like car deliveries, does that go up to like match the space?
You are spot on. Lee, and I do sometimes look at those analogies. There are some overlaps with football, where you're looking at a team, you're looking at clubs, and if you look at Bournemouth, as we know in the local area, well, one of the oldest Porsche centres in the network.
Yeah.
Not the oldest, but they are definitely in, I think, the top 10 of original Porsche centres. So well established, but you're right, we've for such a long time, maybe in a different league or a different level for no fault of their own. And now we are definitely in the Premier League, so to speak. You're right, you do need to have that thinking and mindset to go, we have got a bigger challenge, a bigger operation, almost like a team moving into a new stadium as well. Can you fill the stadium? Can you keep those supporters / customers happy? And you do need to bring in sometimes at key levels, experience where people aren't fazed by those bigger numbers. And that's, again, that's not taking anything away from maybe people who have what they've done before, but when there's a different expectation and the bar is raised, you need to bring in people who can go, I'm not fazed by that, and actually see that as a genuine opportunity that we can do and realise. And I think I'm definitely starting to see that is that we've definitely moved in. You can see it on how quickly we've filled up the workshop, how quickly the amount of cars we have on site now, the display, customer demand. And I know we'll get into another conversation on allocation. You see it, we've been giving more cars from Porsche. That's a bit of a quid pro quo.
Yeah.
You know, if you make a serious investment as a retailer, which Inchcape have, then it's a reciprocal as long as the demand is there from those customers that previously might have had to go elsewhere for certain models, potentially. We can now satisfy. That's really pleasing.
Yeah. And certainly, like, when we're talking about scale again, going back to the workshop side of things, you've got more ramps, more space, you need more staff, but those staff need to be trained to a exacting standards. So that. I can imagine is a bit more of a headache from your
takes time.
Your side, you know? Yeah.
Good people are hard to find. Mm-hmm. And normally good people are normally pretty settled and happy. So unless they are looking for a new challenge or you've got to be competitive with your, whether that's a salary, whether that's a benefits package, combination of both, what you offer to a potential new employee. We've been in high demand, but what I've noticed over time, as we've had more time at this site, it feels as if now we get more incoming requests for vacancies, whether they're live or not. Technicians is always a challenge because technicians are, they're so valuable to any motor dealer business in high demand as well. We're very lucky that we've got a lovely blend of some real experience in the team. And I know you guys know some of those guys as well. But the new people we've brought on as well, we've got to make sure, as you say, can they get up to that standard? We need to make sure we're supporting them fully with their learning paths, whether that's internally and also with Porsche as well. So making sure that they've got all the right accreditation programs. So we're very much on the front foot with, as soon as we're in, we get them booked on those courses. It's invaluable.
Yeah.
They need to do that. Because as we know, some of these cars can be quite complex and you need to know what you're talking about. You've got to with this brand. You've got to be experienced enough to justify why you've identified something needs to be looked at, or you're investigating, or there's a diagnostic that needs to be done or a repair. You need to know what you're doing.
I guess that's a big part of being here, is allowed you to increase the amount of electric cars that you've needed to service.
Definitely.
I think it was probably pretty restricted at the last place, wasn't it?
Very restricted. It just, the site wasn't fit for where Porsche are going with the electrification of the new car model lineup. We've got two of the rapid chargers outside, which are, and I've also made sure they're available for public use as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get the option of whether you want to, who they're visible to. You could set them where...
Okay, so you could set them up in the workshop for just your use or something like that.
Or even just Porsche customers.
Yeah.
But I think really, if we're going to be really all helping collectively, I mean, look what's going on in the world at the moment with all the temperatures and climate and everything like that. Why would it be, if somebody's got an electric vehicle that isn't a Porsche and we've got rapid charges that people pay for, you pay to use them.
Yeah.
Why would you not let someone use them? And we do get people in from other, you know, whether they're on holiday or whether they're passing through. I just think it's a responsible thing to mind. Do.
Yeah.
To have that.
Yeah.
I think it's only fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. So, yeah, look, it's as I said, it's fantastic to invite us back in, Jonathan. And I'm particularly looking forward to today's podcast because you've been really open and basically said, yeah, like, bring some questions, fire them at me. So we thought, well, we'll ask a couple, but really, let's put it out to the people. And with that in mind, we asked our Works and Hero Drivers from the Driven Not Hidden Collective to put their questions to you. And as I say, you've very kindly elected to answer them. So we will dive into some of them. We've got a couple to begin with, and it kind of relates to, you know, this opening 18 months you've had at the centre, alongside kind of, yeah, growing into the facility, as you so well put it. There have obviously been like well-documented issues with parts delivery and availability, I think is the word I'm looking for.
Yep.
How much of a headache has that been for you and your staff?
That is hard. Has been a challenge. I think things have definitely improved since probably in the last 12 months. I definitely think things are becoming more normal from a supply issue, if I can use the word normal. However, where I see the pinch points, or we've definitely had pinch points, and we won't be alone. So, I mean, I can only talk from my experience. Anything, obviously, we're talking about will just be relevant to our centre, but I'm sure within the, you know, the greater network, there will be all the centres having the same challenges. Where it seems to get really tough at the moment is when there's a specific part that is, it's responsible from the company that's manufacturing it or supplying it to the factory. So it's not as if it's a factory part.
Yeah.
They've got an issue. And when it's very bespoke, sometimes that's causing us challenges as well. So I've got a handful of customers at the moment, unfortunately, with different, where it might just be literally, and some are down to one part of a component. Mm. There's one where there's an engine ready bar, one element of it. So frustrating.
Yeah,
that's difficult. Porsche was saying the engine's there on the shelf. Yeah. Engine's there ready for that customer. However, the supplier that supplies that specific part has got a challenge in their own supply chain, which then has the knock-on effect. It's like a domino effect. Mm. And obviously, you know, the customer gets frustrated. And you do, and you sympathise because...
And probably you've got a ramp that's full of a car that...
Depends on what it needs.
Yeah.
So something, you're right, you know, yes, we've got a ramp at the moment that's out of use.
Yeah.
Because we need that part to put it back together, basically. So frustrating on the other side. But yeah, no, I sympathise because I think it's where... That's where it seems to be, is that there seems to be some very sort of localized issues. I'd say the main core sort of typical parts are fairly okay, with a touch of wood there.
Yeah.
As I say.
What's been the troublesome parts for you guys?
Ceramics.
Ceramics had a big issue, and Porsche put a stop on that, especially with new car ordering. And then that's come back. They had issues around... certain elements of carbon, because there was a limitation on the GT3 RSs on the new.
Carbon panels and
yeah. We've got an issue at the moment with a fuel pump. Mm-hmm. It's literally as simple as a fuel pump to a specific engine. Highly frustrating. Battery replacement, a couple of battery replacements for Taycan.
Okay,
when you need a new battery, like a brand new battery, that's not quick.
Yeah,
that's not a quick fix. So, yeah, and a couple of other little ones, which are sort of more electronic led ones. One's a binnacle and an instrument cluster.
Porsche seem to have done pretty well with the sort of supply on chips.
They've got better
chips.
Yep.
That didn't seem to have too much of effect for them.
I think, and again, this is only my sort of opinion and speculation, is I think we're probably very fortunate where Porsche is a brand, and yes, obviously, give or take 50% of Porsche, we have the influence from Volkswagen. I think if you look in the stable, and if you've got one semiconductor chip, which car would you want to put it in?
Yeah.
I think you would probably want to put it in one of the higher VAT, and there's no disrespect to any of the other brands.
Yeah.
I think we got almost a little bit of preferential treatment of when it was tight.
Yeah.
So, and I, you know, only knowing that when you speak to all the people in the industry, and, you know, some of the guys in Volkswagen and Audi really were struggling with things. Yeah. So I think that's improved. I know Porsche now have bought their own, I want to say somewhere like Malaysia or Indonesia, mm-hmm. they've bought their own factory to make chips.
Okay, so, they've got their own control.
So they want to be in more control of that supply chain, so that semiconductor thing doesn't then...
Yeah, that's good. That's a proactive step that will be welcome news, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Okay, yeah, look, thanks for clearing that up. So as you said, we will dive into the questions. The first one we kind of want to get out of the way, really, because I'm sure we're not the first, or this isn't the first conversation within these four walls to talk about allocations. So almost...
Thorny subject. I didn't think we were going to go there, but you're going for it.
Yeah,
man.
This is it. So like it's... we just kind of want to get it out of the way, really. So in last week's podcast, Craig Varty was talking about Spider RS allocation, and he mentioned that some people... He knows, or some people have alleged that they've been told they will get a Spider RS. Mm-hmm. However, so far as I'm aware, numbers for UK allocations haven't been finalised. So it kind of, to me, begs the question, how can cars be promised when numbers aren't finalised? And again, I can imagine, well, no, it must be a constant headache for people like yourself. So how do you as a dealer principal deal with that?
I can only go on what I do, or we do as a centre and a team. Typically, when we're talking about a limited production car, and Porsche do have, you know, a nice array of, you know, whether that's a limited heritage car, whether that's a GT product, as you say, you know, for example, Spider RS, you know, recently been announced. Porsche typically would give you an indicative number, but that they always put a little star and or asterisk to say this is not a guaranteed number. Production may change, quotas may change. So what I've always done over the years, and I feel it has stood me in good stead, is I won't commit to somebody until I know I've got an allocation or a build in our account. I think it just could be, and as I say, what other people want to do is up to them. But I just think it would be, and I've seen it happen a few years back, it was a long time ago, where somebody's, you've dare I say, promised somebody a car, and then unfortunately, the numbers have changed. That's an awkward conversation.
Yeah.
And from a customer point of view, that's not going to go down that well.
Yeah.
So, and it's hard because we do, you know, people will regularly say, any news, and you feel terrible because you almost feel like you're hanging people on. But it's just to say, look, if we get, or when we do, you'll be the first to know.
Yeah.
And that's all I do. And then once we get an allocation into the account, then we will confirm with somebody and say, either say great news or, you know, so you'd have a short list. You'd have a short list, and those lists will vary based on what you think potentially of whether you're going to get one of a model, a couple, whatever, and work it that way. And I think I just always want to do it the fair way. I think it's just right. So I just think it's dangerous to overpromise. But as I say, that's me. That's how I've always done. Maybe with a little bit of caution.
Yeah. How do you, you know, personally, this is you. Decide your list however you decide who gets certain cars. How do you personally feel given that headache behind that process when a car is flipped?
It's quite... I probably shouldn't, but I'd probably take it a bit too close to heart. It's really sad to see because you genuinely feel you've been thorough. You know, and it's not just... It won't just be me as... it's all on mine. I will also as well balance it out with the senior sales management team as well, just to say this is who we think and recommend. Are we all on the same page? So then it's no one's to argue to say it's just one person in control of, yes, I do have the final say.
Yeah, but a bit of a committee.
But a little bit of, exactly that, a collaborative approach.
Yeah.
So then no one could potentially say, oh, well, there's only one person. It's a yes or no to. But when, going back to your point about when you see or hear a car as, or you find out, a car has been flipped that is highly desirable, it's gutting. It's so gutting because you feel you've been let down. You feel your trust has been, you know, you've been sort of, I'm not going to say lied to, that's not the right word, but you've given somebody an opportunity that you go, that all stacks up. That makes a lot of sense as to why that person should. And also potentially sometimes some people will make a big, big point of, this is my dream car. I've always wanted this.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. And then lo and behold, you come, you know, and occasionally it happens. And, you know, somewhat untypically, what happens is either another customer or somebody else within, you know, whether that's, you know, within the business or somebody else will say, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? And your heart just, honestly, my stomach just churns and your heart sinks.
Such a difficult position.
If it gets out, and it typically does, it's just so upsetting to other people, because then other people, I think, well, what's going on there? And it's like,
why didn't I get the allocation? Because exactly. I would have looked after it.
Someone who wants to have it, or to enjoy it, or to use what it's actually designed to do potentially, and it's disappointing.
It's such a difficult subject because everybody sort of says, you know, we've got to fix it, but I don't think there's a way of fixing it. It is what it is, and.
Well, the one argument is you produce more cars, so there is,
or up the price.
A little bit of both, isn't there? Yeah. So there's two things there, isn't there? So if you produce more cars of a limited production car, does it become as special?
Yeah, it's less desirable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's a hard balance.
Yeah.
The pricing thing, I think, is interesting.
Yeah.
I think, if I'm honest, for a few years, I think maybe some of the GT models previously had been a little bit underpriced. I think GT3, if you go back a few years, GT3 was less than a 911 turbo. Now, there's two arguments to say, well, is that right? Is that wrong? But it's been positioned as almost...
The halo car, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. So I think they've addressed that a little bit now.
Yeah.
GT3 RS has had almost that 25K uplift on the base price into the new model year. So that is a start.
Yeah.
But then you don't want to put it so far out of reach that no one could ever...
Yeah,
it's a very ordinary man.
Yeah,
it's a challenge.
Yeah,
it's a challenge.
Absolutely,
you've just got to be making sure you're as thorough as you can be, and you genuinely feel who you've put them to. You've done it right.
Unfortunately, you can't always get that right, or that person's circumstance may change,
and it might change.
Yeah,
and it might change, and people then think, oh, it's an opportunity, and
you
do that. But sometimes I always think to myself, if someone can afford one of those, is it worth really taking the risk to? Potentially, then you've lost all credibility and that probably that relationship you've built up with that centre over time.
Yeah,
but it's money does funny things to people sometimes.
Yeah. I can almost like feel the burden of responsibility on you, Jonathan. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of it's nice to have an understanding of what it's like on the other side of the fence. You know, it's. Don't get me wrong, it's all a first world problem, isn't it? However, it's, you know, yeah.
But it's very topical, I can imagine, right, within your, you know, especially within your audience and the wider audiences of, you know, Porsche and owners and enthusiasts. I can imagine there's a lot of frustration. And as I say, I can only comment from my experience. So again, I don't want people to be thinking what I'm saying is gospel or that is I can only give you what I do or have done or have experienced. The nice thing is on the flip side, because we don't want to sound it's all negative, when you actually genuinely put somebody into a car that is extremely special, and we're not saying every Porsche is special, of course it is, but there's levels of specialness and something really, really something, and they're actually genuinely pleased. It's so rewarding. Yeah. It is. So I don't want anyone to think this is all a very sort of negative subject. Yeah. It is really rewarding. The equation is you're going to let down more people than you actually please, but when you actually do and it goes to the right home or the right person,
and it works out,
it is really nice. It is really, really nice. And it does. And they actually, it gives you a good feeling.
Yeah.
It does give you a good feeling. And that does counter when you do occasionally, unfortunately, if something has happened where someone has, as I say, you know, flipped or turned a car that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
It does help to get the positives back in.
I've just had a thought of maybe a way of making it more, I don't know.
Go on, Brooks logic incoming.
Yeah, a bit of Brooks logic's coming in. So you've got 10 people that are possible purchasers of a GT4 RS.
Mm-hmm. And egg we put and spoon the, race.
No, not negative. No, we're not. No, we're not going to make it competitive in that way. But basically, pull out of a lottery. So, and each of those people has got the possibility of maybe 10 tickets, and you give each person how many tickets you think, you know, they've earned.
Mm-hmm.
So the person that's you know, you think, yeah, this is good. This is a real good guy. He's bought a couple of cars from me, maybe. I feel that he's solid. I'll give him 10 tickets. There's another guy that wants to buy it, but he's only, you know, he's not been around too long. He's a bit flash. He's got a load of Ferraris, but he really wants the GT4. He can afford it. You give him one ticket.
Can you imagine the email? Only one ticket,
yeah.
Mr. Sullivan.
I know, this is all sounding unfair.
You do well, Andy. No, you started to, because I'm going to come in on a minute. Yeah, let you finish. Yeah, yeah.
So basically, all these people have got the amount of tickets that you feel they're worthy of, and then it's a lottery.
Okay. On,
you pick it out of the hat.
So
what do you reckon?
So,
or if I just like, what the hell are
maybe
you talking
about? Maybe
you
should ban the phones.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not the first person, and where I've heard that being suggested to a point, not exactly, but to, you know, do you actually do it where you almost, dare I say, a typical, you draw names out of a hat.
Yes.
The only problem you have, there's two problems you have.
Yeah.
Two problems is the influencer bias.
Mm-hmm.
So if, I'm sure again, if we go back to a 10 years football relevance, when the FA Cup draw gets done, there's a lot of people go, oh, the balls are warm, they know who to pick, look, they've got the time, Man United are playing so and so, it's all a fix, it's all a fix for the TV. So you've also got a little bit, you've got to worry about that, a bias and cynicism, because people saying that there's going to be some sort of you can't everyone won't believe. And then also as well is who, it's a sticky situation to say we think you only get two and we think you only get one.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't agree with that, because I do this, and this, or I have this.
Maybe
or,
they don't know.
But they'd want to know why they only get two versus they get one.
Well, no, you
one.
Don't tell them how many tickets you give them.
But then it's open, you're opening back up to go, if you're keeping something hidden, it could then be
an impossible task.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
But no.
There's no
fifth. I like the way you're thinking. And as I say, I've genuinely, a couple of times where, I've done that with other people where you've played out there. Is there a way we could just, and you get, and it always
equal
comes
the playing
back to
field almost, isn't it?
Someone might go, well, that was fixed. Yeah. He was always going to get that car.
Yeah.
That was fixed.
Yeah.
It's very hard.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Fantastic. Right,
give that some more thought.
Yeah. We'll move on from allocations. And again, Jonathan, just love your honesty on that. So thank you for having the time to answer the question.
It's difficult.
It is. Shall we dive into some of the DNHC question,
absolutely,
Andy. Yeah,
you're gonna go with the first one.
So we have got Jit has said, has there been any change in the demographic of Porsche buyer over the years?
Definitely.
Yeah,
I think there has.
Oh, okay.
I think there has. I joined the brand in 07. There was four models at the time in the lineup, and then you look at how Porsche have grown, and typically, if I remember that, if I go back to that misty time, we had sports cars, we had 911, we had Boxster, and then, you know, not fairly new at the time was Cayman, so they had sports cars, as Porsche have always had their history with. KM was out, it'd only just been facelifted. That was it, and I think that bought a typical type of customer, typically maybe an older male, older guy, I would say typically more. When I look back of who was typically buying cars, not that's a guarantee and that's 100%, but I think definitely say
strong,
the vast majority. Yeah. And then you look at how Porsche have grown. So they bought Panamera in 09. That bought a different segment, almost like a luxury executive segment.
Yeah.
So that brought some new people into Porsche that previously might have, aside from existing customers who would want them.
The age range down by,
I think it might have gone up a bit.
Yeah,
I think it might have went up a bit, because I think we drew people in who might have previously gone Audi A8, 7 Series. Bentleys, I think as well, Bentley Continentals. I think Panamera became an interesting thing for people on that as well. So again, it opened up a slightly new segment for Porsche. I think the big jump, there's two big jumps that they've done most recently, saw a massive change when Macan got launched in 2014. That really opened Porsche up to where I thought they started to really talk about maybe more of a family experience. Typically with a 4x4 and a smaller 4x4, typically, not always, you will see more families in those types of cars. And that definitely brought the demand at the time, remember, it was unbelievable. The amount of people that came into McCann, and yes, there was existing customers who wanted them, but also new people into the brand. Definitely that has brought a wider audience. And then, you know, the other one is Taycan. You know, people who, and I've met these people, you know, met some of these customers who would never consider Porsche previously. But because they did the they had a really interesting, exciting proposition from an electric car. Previously, a lot of Tesla owners. So we've seen a lot of Tesla's owners come in. And some other people waiting for a sort of a premium car brand to do it right. And I know the others are caught up or catching up. Definitely. So I do think Porsche's audience has widened. And I think their marketing campaigns have evolved over time. You know, you look in the recent years, you know, if you'd have said to me in 2007, Porsche were going to do a collaboration with Star Wars and Transformers. Now, I'm a child of the 80s and 90s. Transformers and Star Wars, you've got me quite excited. So to see that they'd position Taycan with a concept combination with one of the new fighters, I think, in one of the Star Wars movies at the time. And, you know, Transformers now, we've got a Porsche classic. We've got a classic in one of the Transformer films. That is so cool. So that brings a new range because you're bringing younger people seeing that. Yeah. Or maybe, like myself, you know, you've got children and the dad or the mum remembers the originals and you're bringing in a new layer of people. And they're big in esports as well now, aren't they? You know, Porsche have got, you know, look at the games that you can now get all the Porsches on, all the racing games and stuff like that. So I do definitely think they're on a journey and they definitely... You know, we've gone off on a bit of a tangent, but I definitely think the demographic has reduced. It's not just typically the older male, dare I say. And, you know, Porsche are really working hard as well because, they have a Driven Females campaign. They want to get more females into the brand as well. And I think certain models help. I think Macan does help. I think, Boxsters and 911s, I think they're becoming more accessible as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really interesting concept as well.
Definitely.
Okay.
Cracking. Absolutely cracking.
Excellent. I'd like to come in with this one, which might seem a little bit strange at first. This is Jeremy Barker brought this up. How would you spend Uncle Reggie's inheritance? Now, this is might be a little bit difficult to understand until I explain briefly. This was a little thing that we set ourselves the other week, which was basically Uncle Reggie had given us 150K each, and we had to go onto the marketplace and find two cars, or whatever. We could spend it with whatever we wanted, couldn't we? But Uncle Reggie had given you this inheritance. He'd worked hard. Mm-hmm. So what you picked had to be like something that was not going to just like lose all its value. So what I'd like you to do is to spend Uncle Reggie's 150K that he's given you. What you've got in the showroom today, what would you pick? In mind that you've got to pick something that's not going to lose its arse in a few weeks.
So just to be clear, is this a car for Uncle Reg?
Or no, this is a car for you.
So car for me, but I've been given inheritance from... Okay.
Yeah,
so if I had £150,000, what would I spend that money on?
Out of your stock that you got here today.
Oh, dearie me. Okay, that is interesting.
There's a lot to choose from.
Okay, what another first world problem.
This is where you're regretting the expansion, John.
Yeah, easy when we had four cars at the showroom. Yes, pick one, it was done. Right, I think I'd probably be doing two things. Just based on my setup, I would definitely, because I was having a conversation the other day, funny enough, I was at the Jaguar Land Rover Experience Center, and speaking to somebody about Porsche there, and we said, you know, what would you buy if you had your money?
Yeah.
What would you buy? Which I think is, the way we're asking it. And I answered him and I said, do you know what I would buy? I would be extremely happy with a Boxster S or a Boxer GTS because I love the two-seater Roadsters.
Yeah.
I think it does everything for me. My wife would be happy because she likes... She likes those cars. She still misses a Peugeot 206cc. She misses her soft top. They bring back great memories of when I used to enjoy my sports cars before I had issues with my back. And they just so well balanced, so well planted. I just think for me, I would be extremely happy with something like that. If I had a colour choice, I'd go Agate Grey. I really like Agate Grey. Mm. So that would be a, you know, so if we had a 981 box to rest, I would, in Agate Grey, that would be that very would tempting.
Tick one tick.
Yeah. It would also leave me a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Potentially to probably something more practical. So that I've got a family sort of along the lines of either a, probably something like a Macan GTS or maybe a Cayenne Coupe.
Yeah.
So I'll try and be a little bit greedy and have two for one.
Yes, yeah, well played, to be fair. Yeah, very, very, very well navigated on that. Spot on. Yeah, so Owain, he has, essentially, there are two questions here. He said...
I love this question.
Yeah, has Jonathan, or a member of Jonathan's team, ever sold a 911 in base Carrera spec without any cost options?
Yes, that does happen occasionally.
Does it?
Occasionally.
Yeah.
Typically... it will be, I've seen it where maybe the car might be a company purchase for a director. So he's either the owner of a business or a company purchase.
Yeah.
He's got a set ceiling, so he can't go a penny above X amount, but he likes the idea of getting a new model. Yeah. Not always 911, it can be, you see it in other models as well. So that isn't beyond the realms of capability. Or similarly as well, if they've looked at it on a... where they're giving a monthly allowance and there's a fixed amount on a monthly payment, that's the amount it will work back to what they can do. So you do see that occasionally.
Yeah, that seems occasionally. That's quite an enforced situation, isn't it? Do you see?
Do you mean by choice?
Yeah, choice.
Odd one.
Yeah,
odd one.
Private buyer odd one. Going.
Odd one.
It's perfect as it is. Base Carrera. I don't need anything more.
Odd one. Not as much as you used to, I think.
Yeah.
Not as much as you used to, but you do see the odd one.
That's so interesting because I feel like with the modern 911s from 901.2 onwards, that base Carrera is such a good package. It's like all the 911 you need now, really, you know. So that is quite interesting. James Bullen has then, there's like a B-side to the question, and it's at the other end of the stick. James asks, what's the most outrageously specced up car that Jonathan or one of his colleagues has ever delivered?
I'm going to have to go back to my previous place of work when I was in London with Porsche.
Yeah.
I saw some extremely, where you got almost conditioned.
Where were you working?
Mayfair.
Okay.
So I was there for 9 years before here. And you definitely saw some quite high or very well specced options on vehicles. I think from memory, I was trying to think of this and I think the record I ever saw was a customer had ordered, I think it was about £88,000 worth of options above a standard standard specification on a 911.
And what was the standard price at the time, money?
That would have been at the time, I think it was something like, something about 90, it was almost double. It ended up looking like double the base price at the time. And typically you wouldn't be, you know, £40,000-£50,000 wasn't that uncommon.
Yeah.
But that was an extreme, you know, that but I thought, well, it's relevant for that question.
Yeah.
Some heavy, heavy option cars. Yeah.
How about something that's totally outrageous? So, you know, somebody's gone exclusive manufacturer and they've gone with a crazy interior that, like, what the hell is that customer doing? But, you know, that's his choice. Have you had any like that?
You get the odd one. I remember, and I won't say who, again, at my old place, there was a customer who did, we did something on his 911 Turbo S Cabriolet, very high profile customer, wanted very different and bespoke leather in the interior.
Yeah.
Went to the exclusive department and asked, could we do this? They said yes. They gave us a price. Very, very expensive, but went for it because he wanted that uniqueness, and Porsche will talk about that. They want that.
It's quite amazing that they will do that, isn't it?
So next question, Nick Moda asks, how is the classic program doing? Is it really hitting objectives of getting customers such as 996 owners engaged? Quite topical considering this is a classic partner, this center.
Do you know, I can only say I think it's doing really well for us. Really, really, really well. On both sides of the fence. So if we break it down into a couple of things, so if you look at the servicing of those vehicles, we are definitely getting more of typically 996, early 997s, other models as well that fall under the classic banner into the service department. That's a fact.
Okay.
That's a fact. So it's definitely a part of the business model that is working really well for us. And I think we've had previous conversations, whether it was on the podcast or separate conversations, that brings more people back into maybe an official OPC that previously might have gone elsewhere. And I can understand why previously, because they felt maybe that there wasn't the care or the experience or the, what were they getting for their money, the value for money on getting their, you know, their cars serviced or, you know, repairs. So I think we've come a long way as an official OPC. And again, I go back to my earlier point, not saying we're perfect, but I think we really have a really nice offering for somebody if they want to bring their car in potentially for some work under the classic banner.
Yeah, spot on. Absolutely spot on.
Cool.
I should just say on the other side of the fence, the interesting one is the sales side.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you've had quite a few go through, haven't you?
We have. And I was just looking at the data this morning. Typically, again, if you look at the OPC market, which is where obviously, you know, we compare ourselves against our peers in the official Porsche network, there are a few more classics out there, but I think the number it equated, or typically any amount of classic vehicles available for sale on the Porsche marketplace at any one time, is really low. Whereas I look at our numbers, classic has already accounted for 10% of our used car sales this year and 15% of our 3 year plus business, they're the two things that Porsche will target us on our pre-owned program of sales. So mm-hmm. How many used cars you're going to sell.
Yeah.
And then also how many are over 3 year plus. So I can definitely say hand on heart, that's incremental business that previously we weren't, or as I say, maybe some other centers aren't doing that. I feel we found that sort of modern classics. You know, we've had a couple of RS60 Spiders in and out really quickly.
Mm.
Lovely, lovely cars that now fit as an late 987 under the classic banner. Beautiful cars.
Yeah. One of our collective bought one, didn't
it? Yes, yeah. Steve bought it. Yeah.
996s, as we say, you know, we've got the 40th for sale at the moment in the classic pod. Some 997 turbos we've been doing well with as well.
Yeah.
Odd 993. So I do feel it's definitely helped us. It's definitely helped us.
They seem like really good numbers, yeah. Jonathan. Again, reference to what you said at the top of the conversation about how you and your staff are, you know, growing into this facility. It includes, therefore, you know, like the sales guys and that's certainly like the buyers as well. It's not just looking at even nearly new stock within the network.
Yep.
It's broadening that knowledge spectrum backwards into 996, 997, 986, 987 and classics. So I feel like within a short space of time to attract like that caliber of car, like the 40th, I've seen there was 996 RS in the showroom before as well.
Mm.
The RS60s, as you said, like that's, they're good numbers.
They are. And I'd say this is not to take away, because I know there's a lot of really good independents who, you know, they're doing a lot more than that, but they've had that time and history and experience with that. This is a new area for us as an official Porsche centre, but as a classic partner that, you know, we were grateful to get that given to us that we want to, because I think some people want to know, they want that peace of mind. And I can, you know, you've got to respect that. Somebody's still spending 25, 30, 40,000 pounds typically on a car that's going to be a hobby or an interest. It might not be a daily driver, so to speak. And especially now with the cost of living as well, you know, they might want that reassurance that they can do that. We've got, we have an Inchcape warranty because the Porsche approved program only goes up to 15 years. So we have an Inchcape warranty that is extremely, extremely comprehensive, mm-hmm. very, very good warranty. And we can put 12 or 24 months warranty on those vehicles. We give the customers the option. And I think that helps give them a bit of peace of mind as well, because it's backed by a very, very large company.
Yeah. Spot on.
Excellent. Okay, slight change of tack from Matt Slightholm. Sales revenue aside, what does success look like for the centre? And what sort of a secondary question there, what makes a good customer?
Oh gosh. Success for the centre?
Revenue aside.
Yeah. So no, exactly. Yeah. So take out the revenue question. Yeah. I think for me, you've got to be measured on the feedback that you get from customers.
Yeah.
So we have our own, Porsche have our own, customer surveys. So we monitor to see how the feedback is. And again, we're making good progress on both sides of the sales and the service teams with that. The other one, which I think is quite powerful, is, the Google review score. Mm-hmm. Because you don't even need to be a customer to leave a review of a company.
Of course.
And you look at some of our most recent ones, because I read them regularly to see what, customers are saying and then share the feedback with the team. The nice thing for me is that I see a lot of names that are not just sales or service people. Mm-hmm. So like the front of house ladies, there's a lovely review I was reading the other day. Two young boys came in with their mothers, desperate to see new 911, and I think they wanted to see all they said was a GT car. We had a GT3, we had our first GT3 RS upstairs at the time. They were blown away to see that. The ladies made a fuss of them. We give a goodie bag out as well to the, that's something I've always wanted to, we do is, customer, children, we give a little goodie bag out as well. And to get a lovely review like that is just, it just makes them happy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's just nice. So how do I measure that? That's, I think, it's important.
Yeah.
We have other league standings with Porsche, and we're doing well in a lot of those KPIs as well. But I think you also want to get a feel for your community and feel for your customer base. And, you get more positive feedback than negative, you're doing something right.
Yeah. And engaging enthusiast, I think, is an important aspect of it as well.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Definitely. That's why we've welcomed, when we've done the events with, the Nineworks team and yourselves, I've always welcomed that because it brings other people in. We were down at, we've had a lot of events recently. We were down at Weymouth on the, with the cars on the prom.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
With the Porsche GB Club. Yeah. So again, you could argue there's a, definitely much more of an enthusiast point of view.
Yeah.
But I think, and we've talked about it before, you've got to be, Porsche for me should be accessible to everybody. Yes, there'll be different levels based on people's, either their buying power, either their preference. So yes, if somebody wants to spend £250,000 on a car, you can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. And there'll be an element of service that needs to go with that. But similarly, the person who's spending £25,000 on his first Porsche, which is a 996 C2 or a C4, then yes, make him feel special as well.
Because
then he will go away with a great memory. That's what it's all about.
And that's where it starts.
Yeah.
Most importantly as well. So it's a great answer. It kind of answers Guy Feltham's question as well, but I will ask it anyway in case there's anything you'd like to add. So he says, how conscious are OPCs of social media opinion? Do they need to care?
You do need to care. I think you do. Social media can be a very powerful or very negative force, can't it? And I think you can see both aspects of the dial. Sometimes you may have to take things with a pinch of salt. You might have to take things offline. Unfortunately, you might see one or two people who will drop something in that will create waves, or people might have genuine feedback, and that's how they want to let you know. So the key thing is, we always will always respond to any positive or negative feedback. Don't shy away from it, and we will always respond to that person. That's a policy we have.
Yeah, don't ignore it. It's good, good policy.
But it is a great, it's social media is, I think it would be naive of a business when you're dealing with customers not to have a presence on social media. And we've really grown, Will, our marketing executive, has done a lot of work on our social media and has really, really grown our following. Instagram and LinkedIn, LinkedIn, we've got, I think we're either the third highest official Porsche retailer page. If you take retail group out that have a collective big following, and I think there's one on the center as well, we're either third or fourth. So we've really, really grown our audience with social media, but organically.
Yeah.
You know, nothing like, you know, we don't get into sort of like pay-per-clicks or, you know, it's genuine things by events or things we think people want to know or see.
Yeah. Great stuff. I think I've got one question from Toby, which I think is a really nice question. I don't know if we want to finish on this or if you've got any more, Lee. His question was, what new model are you most looking forward to arriving?
Ooh.
Are you going to let us in on any hot topics that we don't know of?
No, yet? I don't think so.
Oh, damn.
I don't think so. nice try, Andy, though.
Yeah, always trying.
Yeah, like it. I think the two things for me at very different ends of the spectrum are going to be exciting in the next couple of years for Porsche. Electric Macan.
Yeah.
Big one. Very, very big one. I think it will be as big as when Macan came out.
Yeah.
Getting a lot of people asking about that. Porsche, I think, learning maybe some of the challenges they've had with Taycan. They've delayed it a little bit because they want to get it right. They've got to get that right.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people who want that car.
It definitely is delayed, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. It's still coming next year.
Yeah.
But it's just they've pushed it back a little bit from where... Based on the last information I had. Definitely coming next year, but I think sensible for them to make sure that goes right. Because if they get it right, I think that will just... It's just going to hit all the right spots at the right time. Get it wrong, you could then obviously deal with a lot of, you know, disappointment or negative feedback, which we don't want. So that, for me, I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
The other one, which is right at the other end of the scale, very, very fortunate to see it, to see a prototype at a dealer event I went out to a couple of weeks ago, was the Mission X concept.
Okay.
Incredible thing.
Yeah.
Incredible thing. And, you know, sort of what Porsche were alluding to, they had what I would deem as Porsche's, not just a supercar, a hypercar. So they had a 959 on a plinth. They had the Carrera GT on a plinth. They had the 918 Spider on a plinth. And they had the Mission X concept on the next plinth. And for me, that looked like every decade. There was a car from each decade of the last 40 years of Porsche. It's been announced to the press that it's a concept. So I'm hoping it will become a reality.
Yeah.
They didn't confirm whether they will or won't fully, but I thought, well, you've put it out to the press, you've shown your dealer, your global dealer network, everyone said, wow, what a, you know, build it. I hope they do, because it just looks incredible.
Okay, cool. I was hoping for a little hurrah for the normally aspirated engine, and you were going to say, I'm really looking forward to the Spider RS.
Spider RS, I've seen it in the flesh. It looks incredible. Again, at the same thing.
Yeah.
It looks incredible. Sorry, okay. I'm talking about things that I thought were not yet fully in production.
Okay. Yeah.
So I was a little bit maybe one step ahead. If you're talking to me about what's current, Spider RS, we've got to get excited by that.
Yeah.
And as I say, you know, I like a Boxster, I like a Boxster S. So, you know, preaching to the converted. What else? I mean, there is talk about, you know, I love what they did with the Sport Classic. You know, when they do these one-off bespoke heritage models, I really like. I think they're really cool.
Yeah.
You know, Dakar, you know, I managed to get I was a passenger in a Dakar with a Porsche driver doing an off-road thing, and that just blew my mind. I get it now.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
That is the issue, I think, with that car. It's and I've not experienced that car yet, so I'm kind of trying to reserve judgment. The concept of it,
I was a bit unsure, if I'm honest. I was like, where's it sit? What's it about? Is it really going to, you know, because it's such a niche. It's
still a difficult thing to justify in the UK.
Honestly, it blew my mind to go, and you know, when I was with peers as well, everyone was like, wow. And I go, you're doing this in a 911, you're on an off-road dirt track where you're driving KN, and you're also doing these things in a 911. This is just boggles the mind. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Was it a hard sell to customers, that car?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. Because we had a lot of people asking.
Okay.
A lot of people asking about that car.
Is that done and dusted as far as sales are concerned?
Virtually. Yeah. The always interesting thing with Porsche is occasionally it depends how they're received in other markets. Sometimes you might find Porsche might say, right, we're going to send X amount to one country, but when they give that to the country, for whatever reason, there might be a localized reason where it's not as well received. So sometimes occasionally you might get the odd odd extra car coming back into you. But yeah, no, I mean, Dakar, seeing it, yeah, as Lee says, you know, driving it and experiencing it, which is, it's going to be hard. How can you do that if you don't buy one? Yeah, amazing. But who's that? You've got to find the customer who's going, yeah, I'd quite like to take that off road. Because I'm not saying it's not designed for the road course. It can live on the road, as all Porsches can. But it wants to go out and show you what it can do off-road.
Yeah. But it's a big figure to take down a dirty lane,
well,
isn't it?
Just a bit.
It is. And, you know, as we said before on the podcast, you know, in this country at least, you know, we are a small island. You know, land is limited. You know, we can't just go gallivanting off like, say, the guys in California or the Middle East. So that's where my reservations to that have come from. Yeah. But having spoken to a couple of owners who have had like early allocations of the car, they love it. Yeah. So
I can imagine, I still could imagine, like, you know, hitting the Welsh roads or the Scottish roads. You don't need to be off road.
No, but, you know, I think Scotland, I think you could take it out, as you say, up through a few of the passes and a few. Yeah, I think Scotland and Wales, I think it's probably quite at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I was waiting for, you know, Three Peaks Challenge in Dakar, basically, in this country.
Absolutely.
But yeah, look, fantastic. That's it. It's a brilliant question to finish up from Toby there. Yeah. So thanks to the guys and girls from the collective for pitching those in. It goes without saying, Jonathan, thanks again for stepping up to the Occy.
Oh, yeah, no problem. My pleasure. No. Thank you for allowing me the time to have a chat to you guys. Always enjoy it. Always welcome.
Absolutely. Well, we will be doing some more events here for sure. So thank you in advance for that. And also, not that we can give the date just yet, but we will be having the Nineworks Awards here at Porsche Centre Bournemouth later in the year. And that's a real privilege from our point of view. So thank you to you and your team, Jonathan, for allowing us in the building. So best of luck with the centre over the next few weeks and months. Obviously, we implore people to pop in, take a look around.
Than welcome.
I think some of the classic cars are going up on the Nineworks marketplace as well, which is going to be excellent to see.
Yeah.
Nice. And thanks for your time, Jonathan.
No, thank you, gents.
Thank you.
Cheers.
I have to say, and I know we're going to discuss our kind of favourite guests of this series. For me, I thought that interview is right up there. I really, really admired Jonathan's honesty and openness in there. Really, really great, great questions from the collective, but just brilliant answers. Really refreshing.
I reckon it was the drugs that he was on for his back.
Yeah. He's got a bad back at the moment, unfortunately. So, Jonathan, we hope you're back to full health very, very soon. But yeah, that was honestly a cracker. And to be honest, as I said earlier on, it's just very rare you get to ask a dealer principal those sorts of questions, really, and get those sorts of answers. So
absolutely.
Yeah. And OPCs in generally, DPs particularly, they often get, you know, they take a lot of flack, don't they? Mm-hmm. Some things that are in their control, things that are beyond their control. But they, you know, on social media, they take some heat. So to have access, to, you know, to be open to fielding those questions and, you know, to show such candor in his answers is to really be appreciated, I think.
Absolutely. And it's worth pointing out for the guys and girls listening at home as well, kind of full disclosure, there is nothing, you know, as we went into that conversation, there was no, guys, don't ask me about, say, allocations or whatever, you know, don't ask me about this, don't ask me about that. There was absolutely nothing. And then sometimes when you interview people at Porsche, not that you need a blessing to run it, because, you know, we are journalists, we're not PR. But they like to hear it, and just kind of, you know, it might just require a sign off from their side more than anything, certainly not from ours. But none of that with Jonathan. You know, what Jonathan said, obviously it's his personal opinion. But obviously, yeah, happy to run that. So again, I just think that's kind of worth pointing out, really. That's a completely unfiltered interview, and all the better for it, I would say. So thank you indeed.
Yeah. Thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, boys, looking back on this series then, it has been a busy one, as it always is in these lovely summer months. Who have been your favourite guests?
Do you want me to give you a little summary of the episodes to remind you, or are you all good?
Right.
Well,
shall I? Yeah, go on then. I will.
Go on then.
We started off with Secrets of the Porsche Museum. Then we went Wheeler Dealers, Spec Regret, Porsche GT1, the inside story, Lee missing in action, poor Lee, Jürgen Barth and our Norway road trip, Eye for Detail, the story of garage therapy, Le Mans, Inside Secrets, Singer DLS Turbo 992T, and Late Uncle Reg, Flat Six Show, live from Goodwood, and the Porsche Spider Special, and of course this episode. So just a quick rundown of the episode so far. I think we started off pretty well, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Iris Haker. Now, what a wonderful interview that was. I think I might actually go back and listen to that again.
Yeah, that is a cracker.
Yeah, it was a big interview, a real coup for us, I feel, to be able to get somebody on from, you know, yeah, Porsche HQ, right in the eye of the storm over at Porsche Platz. And I think what was immediately evident about Iris was her effervescence and her enthusiasm for the cars. You know, there really was kind of that adage of she's like, yeah, living her passion and working her passion. You know, it was, it kind of
not
felt
just
like
her passion. It was like, oh, she was almost meant for that role, wasn't it?
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
her like, destiny.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I don't think that's over egging the omelette at all, to be honest. So, yeah, completely agree with that. So, yeah, it was a real pleasure to talk to Iris about that. And again, you know, I don't know, as a hardcore Porsche enthusiast, I'd call myself. It was nice to know that those historically significant cars and the stories behind them that punctuate kind of Porsche's history. It's nice to know that all of those stories and cars are in safe hands. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You
know, the story is going to be told as it should.
And nice as well, just going back to Festival of Speed, you know, how, you know, the factory or the museum support events like that, you know, and I mean, we're so lucky that, you know, some of those cars that are in private hands have got such enthusiastic owners who want to be involved in those sorts of things. But to have Porsche Museum support events like that so enthusiastically, is amazing as well. And that's a credit to Iris and all the, you know, the people involved in the Porsche Museum.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. To be honest, completely agreed. So yeah, cracking guests to kick off the series actually.
Yeah.
And by the same token, it was lovely like to chat to Mike Brewer for Wheeler Dealers as well, just because, as we said at the time, kind of grew up watching Mike on television and just didn't know what it'd be like, really, I think it's fair to say. He's, you know, he's a big character, isn't he?
He is a character, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, only ever seen him on the small screen, not in person. And, you know, part of you always wonders, what are these people like? But I felt like I could have, you know, hung out with a guy all week, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
and to be honest, I feel like he could have probably done that with us. Do you know what I mean? Or anyone. Just, you know, get the guy going about cars and particularly Porsche. He's gone.
Yeah, he's full on passion in.
Yeah. You know, we ask very few questions in those interviews, which are always great, really. You're not kind of prompting anything or whatever. You're just, you know, you're asking a straightforward question and getting a really like nice, long, detailed, textured answer in a way.
Yeah. And it's good to meet Mark as well. He's, I'd say, an excellent presenter to compliment Mike.
Yeah. Agreed. So that was a real highlight for me, I have to say.
I'll tell you one I really enjoyed that was like well outside of my comfort zone, but was a really good interview, I thought, and a really good episode, was with Maz from Garage Therapy. That world is, you know, although I'm an enthusiastic supporter of the detailing industry, in terms of getting my hands dirty, as everyone knows, it's not my, not really my thing. I learned a lot. I thought it was a fascinating episode, and Maz was great value. I really did think that was good.
Yeah. The knowledge that he's coming up with, it's one of them where, you know, like what he's forgotten is not worth knowing sort of thing.
Just
brilliant. Yeah. Absolute brilliant. So yeah, I thoroughly recommend give that podcast a listen if you haven't done so. But yeah, check them out on Instagram without a doubt.
I really loved Spect Regret, which has really rung a tune with everybody in the collective.
I
quite often gets a mention in the WhatsApp group when something a little bit of dubious choice comes up and there's talk of spec regret. It does make me chuckle.
A couple of people have asked me since if we were on the beers that episode. I mean, which, you know, of course we weren't, do you know what I mean? But I think we just had that fantastic mid-engine and mates at Porsche Bournemouth been for a really nice lunch with members of the DNHC.
And yeah.
We recorded it here, didn't we? Recorded it at my house. And yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, it was a Saturday afternoon. The sun was shining. We recorded it outside. We'd had a great day. We're just a bit more loose, but you know, there were no beers involved, unfortunately, but it was a really good episode and nice to kind of tread that sort of topic. Yes. Spec regret. Hopefully without offending anyone. Obviously these are just our opinions. People are entitled to agree or disagree, but it was nice to kind of dive into that. And there definitely have been some comments flying around, Max, you know, in regards to like contrast stitching, you know, oh, Max won't like it or whatever. Yeah. So it's great. It's really good. It's a conversation starter.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is the episode that I've enjoyed recording the most.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the lovely things about that occasion was that we were all together in the same place, same time. And, absolutely. You know, like everyone, you know, life's busy. It's not, you know, it's not easy to bring these podcasts together at all, is it? Let alone to all be in the same place at the same time. But on that occasion, as you say, Saturday afternoon in your back garden after mid-engine mates in high spirits, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, really a lot of fun. That was a great episode to record on that occasion. I think we were really good.
I agree with that. It's, you know, it's always just more special when we're all in the room, I feel like, anyway, when we record these things.
Yeah.
You bounce off each other more naturally when you're around a table rather than looking kind of through a screen. So we do always try, don't we, where possible to record together, sometimes, you know, driving kind of great distances. And I think the podcast is all the better for it. We did kind of extend that a little bit this series with the Flat Six show, like live recording with an audience, which again was fantastic and something that we're going to explore moving forward, because we think there's good value for everybody in doing that and maybe a guest joining us, who knows. But
yeah,
that off the back of our, similarly, we did a live recording at Heritage Park Centre back in January.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Some of the collective, yeah. And again, it was really nice, you know, like people from the audience getting involved and giving us their opinions, and it all just kind of, adds value to the episode. So we'll definitely be doing some of that going forward, I would say.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, actually, wasn't it? It was a little bit nerve-wracking, you know, standing up there and seeing all those people. But it was a lot of fun, and everyone seemed to enjoy it. And yeah, if there's an appetite for that sort of thing, then people should say. There does seem to be a little growing and emerging thing of podcast gigs, if that's the right word. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was really good fun. So if people would like us to do more of that, then let us know and we'll do it.
Definitely. I mean, that's indeed the thing, you know, with podcasts, with anything, to be honest with you, you know, it's not calling for tribalism. You know, you're even us, you know, we'll go and watch other podcast shows because we enjoy them, you know, on a live thing. There's so much room and bandwidth for everybody, and everybody adds something in, whether it's Porsche related or just automotive or even outside of it. So we'll certainly be doing some more of that if we feel it's of good value. I think on evidence it probably is. So
excellent. I'd like to do one more mention for an episode, if I may, and that's when we had Ben Barker on. I think that was a fantastic insight into the depths of Le Mans racing.
Definitely. Agreed, mate. And I would say, if listening at home, if you've not heard that episode yet, it is definitely, definitely, definitely worth checking out. If you'd like to know what it's like on the other side of that pit wall at the most famous endurance race on planet Earth, it's worth checking out. The stuff that Ben reels off, it's so hard pressed to kind of come across that sort of knowledge, really, unless you are kind of part of a race team yourself. We don't talk about tyre strategies, and it's not really a replay of the race. It's kind of, I think what Ben was telling us could easily be applicable to any year, let alone like 2023, where he obviously finished third on the podium in GTE. So that's a great shout, Andy. That is a really good podcast. On that note, we are...
I was teeing up the link.
You're very good. You know, you are Mr. Anchorman. Ben said at the end of the episode, didn't he? You know, obviously in his spare time, he runs an artisan coffee shop and bakery.
Yeah.
It's there are two, actually. There's over Cambridgeshire way. Can't remember where. I think one's Clare and one's Hildesham. I think that's right. But anyway, he said he'd love to do a cars and coffee at the Hildesham premises because there's a little bit more room for parking. And we said, we're your guys. We're your guys for that. We'd really like to visit you as well. So on Sunday the 13th of August from 9 until midday, we are hosting a Nine Works get together, cars and coffee at Ben Barker's coffee shop. It's called Small Town Coffee. Again, for members of the collective, I'll put it on WhatsApp so you can see. If you're not in the collective and you'd like to attend, you are very welcome to do so. Feel free to drop me a DM on Instagram, or you can email hello@nineworks.co.uk for some more information. I think some members of the RPM Technic Drivers Club Rush are going to join us as well. Ben's going to be there on the day, so you can come along, bump some gums with the podium finisher from Le Mans this year in the centenary edition, and more importantly, try out his coffee.
That Ben episode, you know, in terms of coups and things that have been great for Nine Works, you think, you know, Ben basically stepped off the podium at Le Mans and onto the Nine Works Radio podcast, basically.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. And again, in terms of that kind of no filter, we messaged Ben on like the Wednesday before the race, just saying, good luck, Ben. Obviously, he's a longtime friend of the podcast and friend of us at Tottenham 11 magazine. And yeah, said, Ben, would you mind having a chat with us? And he's got back, yeah, just we'll get the race done, then we'll have a chat. So again, absolutely fantastic when people are so kind of open and up for having a chat with us and sharing their story with everybody else. So yeah, big props to Ben for that. And we are very much looking forward to visiting Small Town in August.
Yeah, very much so. I'm looking forward to that.
Lovely.
Amazing. So in the off-season, what are you boys going to be up to?
I'm potentially getting divorced. I mean, I'm not actually married, but still, I am doing the Cotswold Rally with Mandy.
Wonder what's going on then.
That's amazing.
Thanks to you two after that video that you made when you two did it last year. I thought that looked like really good fun.
We nearly got divorced.
And I live I don't live on the edge of the Cotswolds, but, you know, not far. And it is bloody lovely. And I just thought, what a nice way to explore the Cotswolds. I mean, I'm saying this now, I haven't done it yet. It could be a bloody disaster. But my theory is, not taking it too seriously, but what a nice way to explore the Cotswolds by doing the Cotswold Rally. Yeah. So Mandy and I are doing it in the Boxster, hopefully with the roof down. And I mean, there's about, I saw a guy, I regret I didn't catch his name at Goodwood on Friday, the guy who's set the route. He was introduced to me by one of the guys there at Porsche Club GP. I think he said they got 300 cars or something doing it. So I don't know who I'm going to follow.
Wow. Don't follow anyone. Follow your own.
Yeah. But,
followed a few people and got lost.
It's like the blind leading the blind at times. So yeah, like go on your own gut instinct without doubt.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's in a couple of Sundays' time. That's going to be hopefully a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll have great fun with that. It's a really good event organized by Nick Taylor and the team over at PCGB, Cotswolds Region. So yeah, definitely get involved. I'm not sure if there's any spaces left or not, actually. It's massively popular, isn't it? So
yeah. Huge event. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Amazing.
Enjoy.
Yeah. I do just want to say, actually, Max, just on the subject of Boxster, chuck that in the public domain, if I may. You'd mentioned to me on WhatsApp that after your drive of Darren at RPM Technic, his 981 Spider last week, the last episode, it's got you thinking about like mods for your Boxster S reference shifter.
Yeah. One of the things I was wondering about, because I drove over to that episode in my 981 Boxster S to drive Darren's 981 Boxster Spider. And thank you very much again, Darren, for entrusting me with that. And I was wondering, you know, how different can it really be, and how close, you know, what can I do to my car? Straight away, getting in that car, it's got a really nice small steering wheel. Mine has a bus steering wheel. I thought, okay, there's a change. And also, my Boxster has two-way adjustable seats. So not much adjustment, but it means you can get the seat right on the floor, which I like. But I've thought, therefore, that the gear lever feels like a bit of a wand, feels quite high up. And it's a beautiful gear change, but I have just thought that, you know, ever since I bought it and getting into Darren's car straight away, I noticed or felt that it has a shorter, an inch maybe, shorter gear lever. And I think, having done a little bit of research, it's not a short shift or anything mechanically different. It is just a shorter lever setup, gear lever. So I think I'm going to get that fitted to my car. I thought about the steering wheel thing, but steering wheels are, having replaced the steering wheel on my 991, it's very expensive. Yeah. So I'm not going to bother with that, but I am going to do the shorter gear shift. So I think for me as a 981 Boxster S owner, I just buy the GT4 Spider lever assembly, and it's a fairly easy job to fit. There might be some cables that I need to buy as well, but I think a fairly easy job for the guys at RPM or for Chris over at RightTune. And for me, I think, a tangible improvement in one of the key touch points of my car. So I'm really quite excited about that.
Spot on, yeah. Expensive drive in the end, wasn't it, Max?
Well, it could be more expensive. It could be more expensive.
It could be 75 grand expensive.
It could be 75 grand expensive. I tell you what, Andy, that you'd have had to add your blind boots on after that.
I think that was a tactical move by Andy. So
I think it was.
If I don't see it, I won't buy it. So it's fine.
Absolutely.
It was really interesting, actually. One of the many friends that we bumped into at Goodwood, I bumped into Craig Varty.
Oh, yeah.
And had a good chat with him, and got talking about, seating position and, gears, all of that sort of thing. And being a man who owns more Boxster Spiders than anyone else, Craig had some really clear views on the merits of the, the fixed bucket, the folding bucket, and the 18 ways and the two-way adjustable seat, in terms of how high you can get them and, how low you can get them, rather. And all of that sort of thing. So, really, really interesting. There's no spec regret there. It's just all the spec.
all the spec, no regret.
Yeah. So, that was, really interesting.
Awesome. Great. Absolutely stuff. Awesome. Yeah. Andy, what about yourself? So
I've got quite a few weeks, actually. I haven't planned any events or anything for a few weeks. So I think I'm just going to actually take a bit of time off. Might do a bit of tinkering on the car. Can't stop myself from doing that.
Might do a bit of tinkering.
Yeah, there's
definitely do a bit of tinkering.
There's a bit of tinkering. I've got a new exhaust fitted on it already. I don't know if I'd spoken about that last week.
No, I don't think you have. It sounds great. Sounds really good.
Yeah, I picked up a Danks Sport Exhaust Twin Exit for a bargain price. Picked it up from Williams Crawford. They sold it on eBay, of all places. And so I nipped down and picked it up. And it sounds absolutely fantastic. So always like to play a bit of tunage. So that's good. Also got my gear selection issue sorted out as well. Finally, I had first and second were a bit sticky, but I've now managed to fix it. So
just what was going on there then?
Just a bit
of adjustment
in the end. Yeah, I've been everywhere. So I've replaced oil. I've adjusted the clutch, rerouted the clutch cable because the guys at RightTune pointed out that it wasn't routed correctly. So done loads of bits, but finally everything's improved it a small amount, but the final thing was the adjustment, just getting that adjustment just right. So yeah, it's good. Marvellous. You both need to drive it now. I'll let you drive it now that it feels good.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. What I would say as well, it was really nice joining you for the journey down to Goodwood in the SC. And that exhaust, like, beautiful note to it, really just like has elevated the soundtrack of that SC, but pleasingly on the motorway, like not droney at all.
Yeah, zero, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really nice. It's very easy with exhausts, isn't it, to overstep the mark. But no, that's just right, Andy. So good move, I would say, my man. Good move.
Perfect. How about you? What have you got? Anything going on while we're off?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think. There's definitely no like mods on the horizon. I would like to look at improving the shift on the 996. It's pretty good anyway, but I'd like to just,
New cables. I've always said that whenever I've driven it. It feels a bit sticky.
Yeah, I think that's probably the answer. It has that short shift anyway, but just kind of add in a layer of precision again, I think would be quite nice. We're going to do a really cool video with Chris at RightTune. So my car is about to hit 140K miles, which 60 of which have been done under my right foot. So we would like to consider the car's been all around Europe a few times, done track days, et cetera, et cetera. It's very well used. So we'd like to dive into looking at the health of the much maligned M96 engine and just seeing how healthy it is in there.
Yeah.
Again, reference the mileage. So I'm quite looking forward to that. Intrigued at this stage. Yes, I think intrigue will definitely turn to trepidation and precipitation when Chris starts kind of diving into that. But that'll be quite interesting. I think as well, I'd quite like to do some sort, like a bit of a check-in in some sort of like tuition again, because I recently did a hill climb up Shelsley Walsh James Bullen from Redbourn Porsche Owners Club, who organized that. There's a few Nineworks members that went along to it, and it was a good day. And I could give excuses like it was a 4-hour drive from down here, you know, I was out of the house for 4 a.m. etc., etc. But if, you know, if I'm being honest, I was quite sloppy on that day. And then the next week at Goodwood for Flat Six Show, I only did one session for, I think that was a 15-minute session, and then one lap of a later session before it got red flagged. And yeah, I was a little bit rusty, I would say. So I've done a lot of miles in that 996. It's currently my daily, as I've said before. And yeah, I definitely, every drive is a joy in that car. However, I think for really, really pushing on, it's a different mindset, isn't it? A track day to a fast road drive or a road trip. So I think I just need to kind of check in on the on the old techers, I think, and just make sure I'm brushed up a little bit there.
Maybe you need to get in touch with our friend of the pod, Mike Wilds.
Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, he does track day tuition. And I mean, he's the silkiest, smoothest man at the wheel you could ever hope to meet, as well as being one of the fastest.
Yeah, so, yeah. Look, without a doubt, that's such a good idea, Max, to be honest with you. I feel like that's a good way to go. And again, as we've kind of investigated previously, doing something like that, you're investing in yourself, and those skills that you learn are transferable no matter which car you're driving. But there's a modification tends to be, you know, you're nailing the flag to the mast for that particular car, aren't you? So
yeah.
Yeah, so I'll probably be doing that. I'd like to drive the anniversary a bit more. I've done 700 paltry miles in that car since I've had it, and I'd like to do a bit more. I'm flirting heavily with the idea of taking it to the museum for our road trip in October.
Oh, amazing,
I like the idea of it. It's a 40th anniversary car as it is. It's the 20th anniversary of that car.
Yeah.
So it'd be quite nice. I've asked the guys at Porsche GB, you know, how close to the production line can we get for a picture? So, I don't think in a month of Sundays it's likely to happen, to be honest. But if you don't ask, you don't get. So we'll see. Indeed.
Nice.
I think that's a great idea. Really
absolutely,
great idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So before we sign off for the series, have we got any collective updates, Andy?
Got collective updates. So should we do a quick shout out for some merch?
Yes, please.
Everybody's been shouting for it for a long time, and we... I'm glad to say that we finally sorted it. Well, I finally sorted it. I was the blocker. Pasha. We are doing Pasha this time.
Lovely. By
the time this is out, you should have in your inbox and your WhatsApp inbox as well, a PDF with all of the details showing the sheet. The t-shirts that we're doing. They are not as heavy as the previous ones. We thought we'd do a sort of lighter t-shirt for summer, but we're also going to do some hoodies as well. So we're going to do four colors of the t-shirt and two colors of the hoodies, all with the same Pasha Nineworks design on the back, a Nineworks logo on the front, and some other little details. I think they're going to be lovely. Hope you like them.
Yeah, they look beautiful. And again, like, thanks to Hugh as well as you two good selves as well for putting your talents onto that. I think they are absolutely awesome. I quite like the beige. I think that goes really well with Pasha.
It does.
Yeah, it feels quite kind of period correct almost.
Yeah. We've got a few options, so it'd be interesting to see.
I'm really excited about this drop. I think it's going to be brilliant. Yeah. You know, thanks to Hugh for bringing ideas to life and being the sort of main creative. But credit to you as well, Andy, for taking us on. But I know you're famous for your crazy trainers, but you've taken us all on a bit of a, you know, journey, I think, with some of the, you know, the colorways and that sort of thing. I think it's brilliant. I really do. I'm excited. And actually, whilst we've been just recording this pod, I've had a moment of inspiration for another t-shirt, actually. So nice. That's another thing going into the pot. I'll speak to you and we'll get some things drawn up for that. That could be for the next drop, maybe.
Indeed, love it, love it,
love the it. Creative juices are flowing.
Yeah, and I hope everybody wants them and enjoys them.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
Yeah, and get your orders in.
Yeah, talking of 40 hours on Monday when I was leaving Norfolk, we were in Hunstanton and I saw a 40-yard apart on a driveway, which I've never seen before. Somebody did. I think it was somebody in the collective, and I did have a look back to see who it was. I think somebody mentioned that they were in maybe in Norfolk at the same time that I was, but so could have been his. Let me know if it was. But still, to see a 40-yard out in the wild on someone's driveway is pretty exciting.
I'm surprised he didn't go door knocking, Max.
Well, yeah. On another day, maybe I would have done.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I was feeling a little bit worse for wear.
No time for car chat
on that occasion.
Brilliant.
Also, just whilst I'm thinking aloud, I might get involved in that. If you are going to do something with Mike, if there is a track day we can go on to and Mike can be involved, I'll maybe get involved in that league. So I've talked to Mike about that, for ages on and off about doing it. I could definitely benefit from something like that. Yeah, so maybe we could we could work together with him.
Definitely. Yeah, you can never have too much tuition.
Yeah, agreed.
Agreed.
Awesome. Right. Yeah. So collective update. Yeah. Collective update, please, Governor.
Okay. It could take a while. It's been a few weeks since we've done an update, I'm afraid. So hang on in. First up is James Cannon, who is a Works Plus driver. Thank you for joining us, James. He he's actually been working on Porsches for 23 years and runs a company called TH Racing Porsche and German Specialist, which is in Bedfordshire. But he's recently bought himself a 2005 987 2.7. So a Cayman, I believe. Yeah, that's Cayman, isn't it?
Awesome. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Which apparently it was going to be scrapped because nobody could fix it, but he's fixed it. Been to Le Mans in it and loving it. Absolutely loving the new toy.
Absolutely spot on. Yeah, lovely to have you on board as well. So thank you.
Yeah, good to meet you, James. At Flat Six, James.
Yes.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Right, next up was another somebody that we met at Flat Six and saw them at Goodwood Festival of Speed, and that's David Mayers, who's a works driver who came all the way from Australia to come to Flat Six and Goodwood Festival of Speed. David, you live in a little town called Pocolbin. What a name for a town, which is 90 minutes northwest of Sydney. He drives a 991.2 GT3 Touring black-on-black-on-black with some red painted air vents there.
That's his favourite. Yeah.
And he's got Pepita centers in his seats. Previously had a Carrera T, 2018 Carrera T, but traded that in for his GT3. And yeah, great to see you in person. And good to meet up with you.
Basically doing the dream 991s there, I think, David. Not mucking about here.
Yeah, he's doing all right, isn't he? Okay, next up is Scott Shillam, who's a rookie driver. Part of the Porsches by the Lakes crew. He was at Flat Six, so based in Essex. Drives a 997.2 GT Silver Turbo S with full factory aero kit.
Lovely, lovely, lovely.
I think I remember that at Flat Six with quite a few mega stickers
car
on it.
Mega car, yeah. Famously carries a 911 cam number plate.
That's it.
As well, famous car.
I remember Scott's wife, whose name escapes me because we kept calling her Scott's wife because that's how she introduced herself. But nice to meet you both. Okay, next up is Chris Lawson, who's a privateer. He is based in Finland. He's a Brit, but based in Finland. Moved over there last summer, but always back over here. In Finland, he has a 2002 996.2 Carrera 4 Tip. It sounds like it could be quite fun and no ice out there, I guess. He's got
absolutely.
So, good to have you along and nice to have a representation in Finland. Okay. Rob Stroud, privateer. He was one of the guys that was on the Welsh trip with his 992 Turbo S.
Yes.
Nightmares.
Very glad you got that car back now, Rob, as well, because I know there's a few difficulties there. So, yeah, great to have that back.
Yeah, great to have you aboard, Rob. Huge, long letter that you sent, which was great, talking about all sorts of things, including he actually drives a 992 Turbo as a daily, but has the Turbo S as a weekend car.
Oh, right.
Yeah, a little bit. Oh, is that the same but different? Quite interesting. We have to have a chat to him about that. He's had various different cars in the past. 991.2 C4S, a couple of Alphas, M5 RS4 Avant. So, yeah, petrol head through and through.
Absolutely. Yeah, and Rob is a biker as well, and he kind of upholds my theory that bikers love Turbo S's.
Have them for
outright power. So, cracking car. I'm glad, glad you got it back.
Indeed. Right. Next up is Adrian Judge, a rookie driver. He is in Ipswich in Suffolk. He is a friend of Guy's. I've got a nice little stable of cars. 992 GT3 Touring, 991 GT3 RS in PTS Viper, 991 GTS Targa in Riviera, and a 993 C2 manual.
Nice. Good mix in there.
Yeah.
Great lineup of motors.
Indeed. Yeah. Good to have you along. Look forward to meeting you soon, Adrian.
Adrian, I know Adrian a bit. She's a top guy. He'll be in favour of the Pasha. He's a Pasha man.
Is he? Through and through.
Yes. Yeah. Even in his modern car. It's worth having a look. In fact, we'll get Adrian to post some pictures on the collective WhatsApp of the interior of his GT3 Touring.
Yeah.
And then it will all become clear.
Gotcha. Okay. Next up is Adam Trianor, who's a privateer based in Kent. Adam and his wife drive Roof R turbos. One's built in the factory, another one's a conversion. And they were at flat six. I don't even remember the red and black.
Yeah.
Roof.
Yeah.
And they also at the anniversary gig, weren't they, at Heritage back?
Yes,
in the
25 years of 996 last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, it's the red Turbo R. That's the genuine Roof chassis number. Really, really cool car. And Adam, I will say, is not afraid to pedal that thing. Many trips to the Nürburgring have been had in that car. So again, fantastic. Yeah, great tool for the job. Great to have you both on board in the collective.
Wonderful. Okay, next up is Jit Tandy. Sorry, Tanda, works driver from Birmingham. He has a 993 C2 with a few mods and recently purchased a 996 GT2. I believe you've met Max.
Yeah. Jit's mate of mine. He came to Donners and DuckTales.
Yes.
Last time to put some miles on his GT2.
Fancy on his little sketchy spin old down tires.
From Birmingham on his ancient tyres, came down with his sister Bally, and they hung out. They're really nice people. He's also famously got a V6 Clio.
That's really tricked up, isn't it?
So he likes scary cars. He likes scary cars.
Awesome.
And his sister's got one of those trick minis with the carbon bits on it. You know, all the bloody carbon, you know, like a GT3 RS kind of thing, but a mini GP something.
Yeah.
She says she's going to bring that to the next Donners and DuckTales. That's a pretty cool thing.
Sweet. Excellent. Right. Cam Palmer. Sorry, Palmer. Is that simple? As a privateer. He was at the Nineworks Awards last year. Based in Solihull. He has a 991.2 GT3 in Miami Blue. And he's also very fortunate to have recently taken delivery of a 992 GTS manual as his daily.
Ooh, lovely.
He feels very fortunate. And he is a good buddy of George, who we'll be seeing. Canada George, he'll be seeing out at
Rennsport.
Dr. George.
Dr. George, indeed.
Lovely jubbly.
Right. Next up is Jay Tunstall, who's a rookie driver. He is part, I think he's part of the crew that did Porsches by the Lakes. Is that right? Definitely. He knows Guy, Andy Bowers, James, etc. Yes, he is. I helped run Porsche by the Lakes, managing the box to line up with Handsome Pete.
Oh, Handsome yes.
Handsome Pete. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Jay also has a black edition, but it's a 981 rather than a 987. And he's based in London. Welcome along, right, Jay.
Welcome along.
Excellent. Yeah, absolutely. Welcome to the Madhouse.
Okay. We are getting there. Lee Wakeford, who is a works driver, lives in Hook, which I think is in Surrey, and found us through Nick Jeffrey. He has a 997 C2S in cobalt blue.
Very nice.
Super. What was that? A 996?
997.
997. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Nice.
I think maybe previously a leading light in the Porsche Club GB Surrey region.
I think you're right.
It's a nice car. It's a good looking car.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember it coming up on the WhatsApp now. Yeah, it's a really, really nice looking car. Yeah. A lovely colour for it as well, because I think we said before, cobalt is a turbo. It was a 997 turbo colour.
It's a great colour.
It is. It's a lovely, lovely colour. It looks really, really good. Really, really good on that car. So, yeah, great, great find. Great buy.
I'll tell you what, in that the collection of cars that had parked with Porsche Club GB at Goodwood, you know, the, amongst those 200, when Hugh and I were leaving, I saw, I think, a really late 996 turbo in cobalt blue. Would that be possible? A 54 plate?
Entirely possible, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Look really good. Yeah. Really, really good. Oh, yeah, cobalt blue, that's a great colour. I wonder if it's on the PTS list these days.
Ooh.
Maybe.
Could be.
Yeah, lovely.
Right, next up is Alex Palaiologos, who's going to test my dyslexic tunes. And as a rookie driver, interesting tale from Alex. He's from West London, Maida Vale. He bought Guy Wilson's 996, the silver car.
Ah,
yes,
prize winner Guy.
He yes, did, yeah. Prize winner Guy.
Yeah, but unfortunately, sadly, the car was rear-ended while waiting at the traffic lights only 2 weeks after he bought it. So unfortunately, that 996 is no more. It was written off. Definitely wasn't scratched though. So he's got claimed the insurance money, and he's bought a really nice, 2003 986 Boxster S, which I think we've all seen the pictures of on the
WhatsApp. Yeah, lovely.
It did look really nice. It was the one with the red?
Yeah.
Red roof.
Interior,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Red interior. Yeah. It's a great.
There's been so many Boxsters added to the Driven Not Hidden collective over the last, couple of weeks. I'm losing track.
Great though, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? I think it's absolutely awesome that people are stepping into that. And again, just like a bit of added insight for those listening at home, the last episode of last series, where Max, it was all about your buying experience, and obviously titled I Swapped My 911 for a Boxster, because that's what you did. It's one of our most listened to podcasts of all time, so it's garnered a lot of interest. Yeah, I think you've started something there, Max.
Yeah.
He looks quite proud.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. Next up is Tim Dredge, who's a works driver. Really loving the Nine Works podcasts. Thank you. He is from Farnham in Surrey, drives a 991.1 GT3 Club Sport in Agate Grey. Been a regular visit to Le Mans, did both Le Mans 24-hour and the Classic this year, and hoping to get aboard with the Nine Works road trip.
Amazing.
Lots of interesting sort of car history. Type 3 Fastbacks, 1967 Beetle, 66 Split Screen, VR6 Golf. Oh, it all sounds good, doesn't it? We've all been there. For the future, he'd like to add an air-cooled Porsche. Maybe a 964 or a 930. So,
that'd be a pairing, wouldn't it? 991 GT3 and a 964 or a 930. What? Wow, that's living the dream, that, isn't
banging,
it?
Banging, yeah. Absolutely banging.
Yeah.
One air, one water. I mean, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Okay. Naomi Northey, who's a rookie driver, just joined us this week. She has recently purchased a 1981 911 SC, which is beautiful in black. And if you've seen it on the WhatsApp group.
Yeah, great looking thing.
Chrome looking wheels on it. Looks really nice. And of course, has got a great sticker in the window, Driven Not Hidden. She's up for representing the Driven Not Hidden collective.
Absolutely. Yeah, Naomi, pleasure to have you on board. So yeah, thanks for coming along. Lovely SC as well. Lovely, lovely SC.
Yeah, it looks very nice. Right. Last one of the new members is Roger Holmes, who's a privateer. Finally coming into the fold with a recent purchase of a C4S, 996 C4S. Roger is the other half of Garage Therapy.
Amazing.
So welcome aboard, Roger.
Yes, nice one, Roger. I know Roger's been looking to jump into the 911 world for a little bit, but just been waiting for the right car. So I'm pleased that day has arrived at last. So happy days.
Yeah, continuing the blue theme, it's lapis blue.
It's another lovely colour, lapis.
Yeah, lapis, isn't it?
Beautiful.
And it's got a blue interior as well. Would that be ocean blue or Metropole? I'm not sure. One of Metropole, one of 906, wouldn't there? What a great combination. Love it.
Lovely, lovely.
Unpopular for a while, but good now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Can I say as well, it's great when you're introducing yourselves and writing Andy your intro, which we obviously you then put into the group. If you would like to bang an adjective in before your name, like, please go for it, because like Handsome Pete, I love it. I absolutely love it. And so we've got Handsome Pete, we've got prize winner guy. And then we've also got Bristol Pete as well. So if you want to chuck in your location and I think Bristol Pete started something. We're going to have like Shepton Mallet Mike soon and Malcolm from Morecambe. Or all sorts. So yeah, like if you want to, for some added spice, go for it.
Yeah, brilliant. I've just got a couple of upgrades to announce as well. Neil Waters, privateer to Works. Nick Jeffrey, rookie to Works. And Paul Vandalone, privateer to Works. I'm pretty sure Nick and Paul were after spaces on the European trip, so that was the reason for their upgrade. So thank you guys.
Yes, absolutely, thank you for that, and it was worth it as well. So we offered that trip to the museum to Works level drivers first. Those guys that wanted to be on could go on, which was absolutely fantastic. We are taking 15 cars, governed by how many cars the museum can accommodate for us, which is lovely. And there were a couple of spaces left over, and they were snapped up by the rookie drivers and privateer drivers within an afternoon. So it's a really good group going on that. And again, just thanks to everybody who wanted to be involved. It's fantastic to see such enthusiasm for big road trips. Hashtag driven, not hidden.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And just a little bit of kudos and credit and thanks to Nick Jeffrey for making that upgrade. He's been talking about an upgrade for a long time, and I've outed him a few times, and I'm delighted that he's done it.
I mean, he's so busy. He's so busy. I mean, like, he's driving around the Dolomites or something at the moment.
He is. He's got a lot on. He's got a lot of driving to do.
He still finds time to get people signed up to the podcast. So I'm hoping, not against their will or anything. He's a real champion. As his guy, Guise, we absolutely say that. I feel like there's not a podcast episode that goes by where we don't mention Guy's name. So like, again, we're just, appreciate everything you do for us, mate.
Yeah, indeed.
Absolutely.
Marvellous.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, that wraps up the series, gents. I think we should maybe do a spread the love to sign off, if you guys are cool with that.
Yeah. Well, what about a gem of the week?
Oh, yeah, gem of the week.
Absolutely, yeah. And I tell you what, looking at the marketplace earlier on, Max, there are some bangers on there. I think there's like 82 cars, again, all warrantied, all from reputable dealers around the industry as well. But some additions I spied going up this week.
Yes.
Lovely, lovely stuff.
There's one of those that has caught my eye.
Okay.
I went on there just to refresh my memory on a car that I'd already seen when I was looking the other day, that I thought, well, that's a shoe-in for Gem of the Week, isn't it? But as you say, there's been some lovely things that have popped up, and I thought, bloody hell, this thing jumped at me. I thought, what a car to disappear into the summer break-in would be, I don't know if you'll guess it, would be the Zenith Blue 993 C2S,
yeah,
which is at RPM. It's just come onto their books. I mean, Zenith Blue, what a beautiful colour for a 993. It's a manual car. It's got a little sunroof just to get a little bit of wind in your hair. I could see myself cruising around in the summer break in that thing, I tell you.
Yeah.
Bloody lovely.
It looks good, doesn't it? It looks absolutely phenomenal. And again, that colour, Zenith, that was actually the same colour as my 996, by the way, from factory, that first model year of 996. I'm sure it was a 996 colour, but available for those last 993s rather than it being a 993 colour rolled over. I could be wrong. Therefore, I think that C2S looks absolutely sensational in Zenith Blue. I think it actually wears that colour nicer than a 996, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, lovely, lovely. Is the front sort of air dam spoiler, is that part of the wide body 993 look? It looks like it's got a bit more of a chin on it.
Yeah, I know what you mean on that. Yeah, that does look to be maybe slightly different. I don't know whether that would be like aero kit or equipment. The C2S did get the turbo bumper, but yeah, that has a bit more of a prominent chin, I would say, to it.
Bumper.
Yeah,
I don't think it is.
No,
I don't think it's Turbo S. It looks
pretty sexy, whatever it is.
Yeah, it does look nice. It does look nice. Yeah, nice to see the ginger caters in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
where they should be. Yeah, lovely. So lovely thing that is. Get on the marketplace, everyone, and have a look at that.
Yeah, without a doubt, good choice, Max. Good choice. Yeah, let's sign off with a spread the love then to finish. So there's a little bit of I don't know. Yeah, fluffing the pillow is something that's gone round a lot, but I think it's worthwhile pointing this out. So I want to talk about Total 911 magazine for the reason, and I kind of can't stress enough how awesome this is, that we introduced a new level of membership called Works Plus. And it's essentially the Works level, but you pay for it up front, i.e. for the full year. And as part of that, you get Total 911 magazine. And we sort all the admin out for that. As I've said before, we take all the hassle away from sorting out your subscription. And it's just lovely because every 4 weeks, there's 13 issues a year. That magazine flops through your door if you're in the UK, because you get a paper copy. If you're a collective member from the rest of the world, you'll get a digital copy. And really, these days, a magazine, not only does it buy you high quality journalism dedicated to the Porsche 911 in this case, but it also buys you 10 minutes peace and quiet away, you know, give yourself a digital detox. We're all on screens for far too long all day and all the rest of it. So just buys you a little bit of solace to indulge in your flat six passion in this case. So I'd like to just spread the word for that, really. It's obviously print these days is a lot more of a challenging environment for everybody, to be honest with you, than we've seen ever before. So it's lovely that we have so many of these awesome magazines still going. Obviously, not just T911. There's some other fantastic Porsche titles out there around the world. So support as many of them as you can, I would say. But yeah, it's a really nice little bit for us, I think, to be able to offer that as part of a Works Plus membership. Is basically a complimentary subscription to Total 911. So that's my spread the love.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I like that. Yeah, it's nice. It's the magazine you've got to read, you know, if you're into Porsches and Porsche 911s. And as you say, you know, print is not an easy environment. There's a magazine that I'd started, I bought it for Mandy, a subscription, a really nicely designed, beautiful travel magazine called Suitcase. And, you know, I got an email from them recently. They've gone to the wall.
Yeah,
not really.
I think they're still going to have an online presence, but in print, it's done. Which is a real shame because it was beautifully produced.
Yeah.
You've got to keep buying these print magazines, guys, because it's tough out there and they're bloody fantastic.
Good words, cool. Max. Good works. Yeah. So what's your spread the love then, Max?
My spread the love, just to continue my gushy mood, I wanted to spread the love to anyone over the course of this series who sent me any sort of little DM or comment, just to say how much or how little, but, you know, some value they get from the pod, some little solace, some bit of intrigue, some bit of knowledge, a laugh, maybe, you know, any of those things. And some people just occasionally just send a little note to me, nice, and to you guys as well, and just say, you know, I really enjoyed that, or, you know, that was really cool, or I went somewhere because I engaged.
Or I spent 75 grand because...
yeah. You know, and just little things like that. You know, I got an email from Charlie. Not an email, I got a text from Charlie of CW Car Care this morning. He was off into Bedfordshire to detail someone's car who heard about it through the pod and got in touch with Charlie. And, you know, so, you know, that's the spread the love is working in positive ways. Fantastic. So, yeah. So anyone who's engaged with anyone new, either for business or pleasure, from listening to the podcast or sent me a message to say, I enjoyed that. Thank you.
Very lovely, nice. Max. Absolutely lovely. And to be honest, it follows on, I would just like to say, so a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about, like, you know, hateful comments and how they're out there and how to deal with them, really, particularly reference to like some YouTube comments on my channel that I've seen. Well, at Flat Six Show, it was Robert Batt. I'm pretty sure it was you, Robert, who came up to me and said, look, just what, you know, ignore all of it, which, you know, again, was really nice to get some really kind of positive comments to counteract all of that. Actually, Neil Plumpton got a lovely message from you, so thank you for that, mate. That was awesome. And but yeah, you know, Robert said, you know, just ignore all of that, keep doing what you're doing. You know, what you guys are doing, you are part of our week, because in Robert's case, he listens to the podcast on his way to work, which I think was a sizable journey from memory.
Yeah.
So you know, said, yeah, we're you're part of people's week. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I felt the burden of responsibility there, but actually it was just really nice to hear that and such kind of genuine kindness and warmth. There's a lot of hatred out there and whatnot flying around the world at the best of times anyway. So it was really nice just to hear some really lovely stuff from lovely people, to be honest. So to echo that, Max, to be honest, I think that was a really apt thing to say, mate.
Yeah, agreed.
Andy, what about you for your spread the love?
Well, I feel quite hollow in what I'm going to bring up, which is just a recommendation for a YouTube video.
Hey, feels that's bit, all good.
Feels all a bit hollow after you two gushing there, doesn't it?
Having our little loving.
My spread the love this week is for Tyrrell's Classic Workshop. What's his first name? Ian Tyrrell, isn't it? Yeah. He started off doing some great YouTube stuff on the back of Harry's Garage, probably a couple of years ago now. And His stuff is really interesting. He has some amazing cars, not just Porsche. But he's recently done a little video on a 2.7 Lux 911, which was a lovely little video going through the sort of details of how original the car was. Apart from a couple of things, I think it had a bit of a sketchy steering wheel and stereo on it, but everything else was lovely, and that was a really good video. But I'd recommend Tyrrell's Classic Workshop as a general watch.
Yeah, some really good stuff on there. Really good stuff. A lot of Italian stuff, like Lamborghinis and stuff. Some serious stuff. God, that reminds me. Actually, last week, I was coming home from the gym. I'd just crossed over the A41 in between Aylesbury and Wadston. Driving along, I saw a Lamborghini Miura. On the road. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
The guy was sitting on the right-hand drive. It was right-hand drive. It was black with gold wheels and that sill along the bottom in gold. Bloody Lamborghini Miura on the road. Amazing.
Fantastic.
Absolutely amazing.
On the way to Goodwood.
Well, maybe it could have been doing its Goodwood prep. It was a couple of days before Goodwood. But that was bloody brilliant. Made my day, that did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite good Tyrrell's stuff because he does lots of the Lamborghini Miura stuff of late. I've seen that.
Yeah.
And all of his restorations that he does are very much wanting to keep as much as the original car as possible.
Yeah.
So it's really quite interesting from that point. You know, it's not let's strip this thing to its bones and start again. It's all kind of considered restoration.
Yeah. Sympathetic restoration. Yeah. And I always feel to be, you know, restored to be driven, not hidden, rather than sort of overly restored to be just, you know, cosseted.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Right. Good one.
Done.
Good one.
Done. Fantastic, gents. Yeah. Well, look, that wraps up another episode and another series of Nine Works Radio. Also, I'm going to miss you guys. I will on the podcast, but luckily, we get to see each other in the off season as well. So we'll look forward to
plenty
that.
Plenty of planning to be done.
Plenty coming up. Like, oh my God, yeah, here and abroad, actually, for next series. It's going to be busy. And we always look forward to it. So, yeah, thanks for listening at home. For every like, comment, listen, anything you do to support us, we really, really appreciate it. And we will look forward to bringing you more awesome content towards the end of summer.
Yeah, enjoy your holidays and we'll see you at the shows.
Yeah, see you soon.
This episode was brought to you by our very kind Driven Not Hidden collective. If you would like to join the collective to get further access and rewards within the Nineworks community, you can do so at patreon.com/Nineworks. You can also support us by leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app.